Thanks for tuning into the Happiness Playbook, a podcast that supports your practice of play theory, a life strategy that cultivates hope, generosity, and validation of self and others. Here at the Happiness Playbook, we believe life is a team sport and we're all in this together. So let's join forces as we focus on the positive and share tips and practices to improve your happiness game. I'm Marie Florence and I'll be your host for episode 89 of the Happiness Playbook. I'm super stoked to have my good friend Jana Hargett on here with me. I've known Jana since we were both fresh out of college and newly married. We go way back. Our kids grew up together, and among many other shared activities, Jana and I co-founded the theater company that I currently volunteer with, Take Note Troupe. She was at ground zero when play theory was taking shape out of the ethereal mists of organized chaos that we were swimming in as we set about building a youth theater program. But before we get to our chat with Jana, let's do our post-game analysis. In episode 88, we talked about the superpower of looking outward. Were you able to try it out and look outward, thinking about and then taking action to make another person's experience more positive? How did you feel when you did something to serve another person? As promised, were you uplifted as well? Let us know how your play theory happiness practice is going. Drop us a message on Instagram or send us an email. If you haven't already done so, look outward and follow the Happiness Playbook on Instagram or on Facebook and help us spread the good word. All right, let's get to the good stuff. I have always admired Jana Hargadon. She is classy, creative. She'll deny it.
Marie.
She is also kind.
Keep going.
She's beautiful. She has great style.
Oh my gosh.
Love it.
Stop.
No, I've always looked up to her. She has been a bedrock of validation and support for me over the years, and I can say that Take Note Troupe nor Play Theory would exist without her. Even though we've lived on opposite sides of the country, we continue to connect and collaborate. She's a great example to me of letting go and playing. She has 4 amazing children and 5, right, darling,
yep,
grandkids?
Mm-hmm.
This last year, as an empty nester, she went back to university to further explore her love of art and to pursue her interest in helping others through art therapy.
Yes.
I was blown away by that. I thought that was so awesome. So is there anything else that you want to add?
Gosh, I think we realized that we each had half of a brain.
Oh, that's
and
right.
And that together we had one brain. And that's how we did what we did.
Oh.
I think we had our 2 oldest daughters, Anna and Aurora, who indicated an interest in doing Shakespeare.
Right, right. They connived and talked us into it. And we hired that tutor the first year that made them all write their own sonnet and do the iambic pentameter, and they didn't enjoy that.
Well, the group of kids didn't enjoy it, but Anna and Aurora did. And, however, we knew we couldn't just do a 2-woman show
of
Shakespeare. So
right.
We needed to make it palatable to the rest of the group.
Right.
And make it more of fun for them.
Yeah.
More enjoyable.
Yep.
And so that's when our half brains got together and concocted, let's do a play in the backyard.
Oh, that's right, because Aurora had said, I remember her telling me that the tutor that we had hired had told them that the best way to learn Shakespeare was to perform it.
Mm.
And our 2 half brains, somehow you said, mm-hmm, I'll kind of run the producer side of it. I'll help with the details if you direct it. And so,
right.
And it just kept going from there.
Yeah.
Who knew?
And you were once, I think at one of the Shakespeare competitions, you were described as an organic.
That's right.
An organic director, like,
yes,
no training, but you were like organically grown in
That's
the soil
right.
of our craziness.
That's right. We knew nothing. We had no training, but we were enthusiastic,
yeah,
and we were committed. And you know what? That gets you a lot of ground.
It sure does.
Yeah. Yeah. So talking about TNT. So that's how it started. And Jana jumped and talked about these Shakespeare competitions, but this is where the half brain thing comes in. So I had directed a show in the backyard. We did The Tempest with just family coming and watching it. And like for the ship crash, we turned the hose on the audience.
We probably had a play structure, swing set somehow was involved.
It was very fun, lighthearted, but the kids loved it.
Mm-hmm. It was fun.
So then we did it again the second year, and it was so well received. We
concocted. This was where Jana came in. You figured out a way to play, to do it at, it was a park that was behind a church. So technically, that was our first Shakespeare in the Park. And,
yes.
And then the next year, you coughed up an even better park, the Royer Park.
Right. That was something. Yeah. Do you remember we were rehearsing, and that park was a hangout for a lot of the homeless men.
Yes.
And women.
Yes.
And at one point, you know, we were kind of nervous about that, but I remember standing back and watching, and there was one of the homeless men was there, and I could see him mouthing the words.
Wow.
And I said, "Do you know the show?" And he's like, I know the play. I know Shakespeare. And he started telling me about the show, and it just shifted a lot.
Yeah.
That Shakespeare was for everyone.
Right, and that these individuals that you classify, or we classify in this category as homeless, and what does that mean about them? That he was a man who was educated and had an appreciation for this higher language. Mm-hmm.
And he actually became our protector.
Yeah.
Because he said, "Okay, you've got to watch out for that guy, but I'll be here and watch after you
guys."
Was
he the same guy, or was it a different year that there was one of the homeless guys that he showed up at one at? We would go there for like a dress rehearsal or a run through, and then we would do the shows like three in a row. And I remember there was a guy who had showed up, and then he came and was at every show after that. And he would kind of be in the back of the crowd, but he was there, and you could tell he was appreciating it. I don't think he was the same one.
It feeds our souls.
Yeah,
period.
It really does.
You know.
So Jana had I wasn't interested in all of this growth that Jana was creating, but then she also found out that there was a Shakespeare competition. Do you know how you found that? How found out about that?
I don't.
It's a national. It's the Utah Shakespeare Festival that happens in Cedar City, Utah, every fall, and they have a run of shows. It's a Tony Award winning organization, and she found out that there was a competition for high school aged youth. And we were this little homeschool group. Some of our kids attended high school, regular public school, but a lot were homeschooled. And somehow she was able to find out that we could come, even though we weren't a public school. And she figured out which category, and we showed up. I had a lot of stress and anxiety about it because, as Jana mentioned, I had no training. And I remember that first competition, you'd prepare these scenes, and then they would get adjudicated, which I didn't know what that meant, but I guess it's judged and critiqued. And these kids are up there just bearing their souls, but my soul was on the line too because I'd been coaching them, and I'm just scribbling madly, "Okay, what does objective mean?" Which is like the very foundation of acting.
They were so raw, and they were so good, though. They were so good.
Yeah, I think part of the reason they did have success, and that I had success, is we weren't trying to meet any expectations. Mm-hmm. We were just trying to serve the text and share these stories. Mm-hmm. And so we had some success.
And have it be uplifting. And I remember one thing we noticed was when we showed up on the scene, we were like the only group in color. Everyone else was dark colors.
The standard was to wear actors black, which we had no idea. So we would show up in our colorful costumes or colorful t-shirts, and we kind of stood out.
We were happy, and we'd play little games.
Because we weren't stressed. We had no hopes of winning. So
we found great places to stay. And maybe it originally came about because we thought, well, what if after our shows we did something fun with the kids, like actually took them to see Shakespeare performed in the Round and the Cedar City?
They have a replica of the Globe. It's really beautiful. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was.
Maybe that's how we all found out about it.
Well, it was wonderful. It became quite a tradition. Mm-hmm. And just for the record, we did end up winning a lot of awards. Mm-hmm. We created quite a hullabaloo when we took first place in the ensemble scene our second year there. Was it our second year going?
Yeah, we were.
Yeah, or maybe it was our third year. I think it was our second year.
The underdogs.
Yeah, we were the underdogs, and it was quite upsetting to a number of other people who had attended for
years. Fancy schools.
Yeah, we were up against some of the art conservatory schools, and they actually ended up making a new category in an attempt to get us kicked out of the competition. They made it, you know, wanted to make it harder for us to compete. They didn't want these kids from California coming over. Mm. But we kept coming, and we, you know, over the years won quite a few awards. But eventually figured out what all the adjudication they were saying meant, so I felt like figured we need to go anyway.
Yeah, been there, done that.
Yeah, so but that was
the,
fun.
The adventures in the RV, driving with all the kids.
Oh my goodness.
It was really fun.
It was very fun.
Good times. Lots stayed of in memories. A really nice bed and breakfast.
Yes, this was Janice doing. She was able to convince this big yellow inn, the owners there, that a group of 40 high school thespians would not destroy this bed and breakfast. And
yeah, they would take good care of it, which they did.
They did.
You have high expectations for kids and they meet them for the most part.
It's true. It's true. Yeah, and I remember Jana was also really, really wonderful at recognizing that this theater group was an opportunity to mentor kids, not necessarily teach them theater. And do you remember, she shall remain nameless, but there was a girl in the troupe who wore these sweatshirts that came down to her knees, really, really big oversized sweatshirts. I don't know if you remember this. Her older brother, someone had found out from, you know, parents of the kids that were in the group or something that there was this great thing going on that was really helping kids find themselves and develop friends. And so this brother and sister showed up, and they were struggling. Their parents had divorced, and they were both living with, I think it was the stepdad, I can't remember, but he showed up in full camo, including camo makeup, and that first day. And she always wore these sweatshirts and had really, really poor posture. And Jana just loved and nurtured, and she figured out a few weeks in that this girl who had been uprooted from her family of origin and was with a stepmom because she was uncomfortable talking to her mom, she needed a bra and didn't want to get one with her stepmom. And somehow you figured this out and were able to get this girl a bra. She showed up the week after Janet made that happen, and she had a much more fitted shirt and had regular posture. And
all need a little something-something sometimes. Well,
and that's just Jana's ability to look outward and that wonderful question of asking what's needed. And she saw this girl who looked miserable and was not able to present herself in a confident way, and you know, was able to ask the right questions with, you know, this girl trusted and knew that Jana's intentions were pure and was able to get that help.
Maybe the right questions was informed by with empathy. I mean, I remember being an awkward 12-year-old, maturing early and wearing the big sweatshirts and folding my arms and hunching over. And
so because you'd been there, maybe you recognize that. Okay, so we did this theater thing. We're doing Shakespeare. And then Jana has this idea that we need to go do improv. And I'm like, oh, my gosh. You've already got me directing Shakespeare. I am going to a Shakespeare competition.
You can do it,
Larry. I'm driving kids across state lines in an RV. Oh, so, yeah, tell us the story of Flash Family.
So I think my husband and I went with a couple of friends to San Francisco, and we heard about this improv group that were family friendly. And we went to it, and it was hilarious. And that's when I thought, well, we should ask them if they would do a workshop for our kids.
So I love that. Jana saw this group. She loved what they were doing and thought, this could serve this group that I'm already serving. And then you call them up and collaborate and make that happen. And then she has to come to me and say, hey, I want to take all the kids into San Francisco and do an improv workshop. And I'm already, I didn't start theater because I love theater. I was afraid of theater. Mm. And it was really out of my comfort zone. Well, there can be risque jokes, and there can be an image of anything goes. There's no inhibition, and you can say anything, and things can be dicey. Mm-hmm. And that does happen. But with Flash Family, as you experienced, they were family-friendly. And Jana, because I was worried about it, took the time to really chat with them and make sure they knew what our goals were. And they were wonderful.
Yeah, they were genuinely surprised by our goals.
Our theater company, we've always been about providing this opportunity for the kids to experience growth and gain confidence, not necessarily, you know, have the biggest audience or the best show, which
and
ironically
serve
when you
others.
Yeah, and when you focus on that process, you end up with a great product, i.e. production. So we have had success, but it's because we focused on that process. And Jana was so, so instrumental in getting that process going. So,
and it was really, really, I remember driving to San Francisco, parking on the hills, I think we were in my big old van.
Yeah, two big old vans. Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Ours was called Hargabub. Everyone thought it was Hargaboob back in the bra thing. But
yeah.
Yeah, we found a place to park, and then their workshop space was just kind of cool old San Francisco.
Yeah, big second windows. Story loft with the big windows looking out over the busy streets and
yeah. And
very urban.
Yeah, and the kids, their body language probably demonstrated extreme nervousness.
Yeah,
but
they didn't know what they're getting into.
They were brave and they did it, and they did great.
Yeah.
Don't you remember?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and I remember specifically Andy, who we still work with today at times. He said, "You guys are doing so great. We can do some more advanced things." And he showed us some musical improv. And that's when we got the Oshi. Do you remember Oshi? That game where you have somebody who somebody sings gibberish, the other person interprets it, and then you can have backup dancers.
Mm-hmm.
And anyway, I think it was fun because the energy was so positive because everybody was playful. No one was being drug along. But these principles that are foundational to improv really ring true for us. And the foundational principle mm-hmm, for improv mm-hmm. is to say yes. And so in an improvised scene, and as Andy was doing this workshop, if someone makes an offer, like you're two people, you ask the audience for some type of suggestion and they say groceries.
Mm-hmm.
So then the two people just have to start a scene. And if I turn to the person that if I'm in the scene and I say, "All right, we've got to hurry up and buy the ingredients for breakfast. The guests will be there in an hour." The other person has to accept that idea and add to it. They can't say, "What are you talking about? No, there are no guests coming."
Mm-hmm.
There wouldn't be a scene, right?
Right. It kills the scene.
Yeah. And that, if you're a student of play theory, you'll recognize that yes and, we've adapted that to the phrase accept and build. But that same principle of accepting that idea or an offer and then building on it or redirecting it versus just saying no, which is what our culture does right now. Mm-hmm. We really want to defend and make sure we're safe and assess before we move forward. And the energy in this workshop and teaching that principle was so transformative. I think it was like electricity, you know. I think everybody could feel there was something there. And I think we'd been kind of playing around with these big laminated posters we would make, and we would go into schools and do workshops, and we were trying to kind of feel around for these principles because we got tired of saying, "Hey, be quiet."
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
"Hey, you, stop talking over there in the corner." Or, "Hey, don't be so full of yourself." With our kids in the troupe, we thought, if we can teach them proper principles, and they'll police each other. They'll tell each other what's mm-hmm. needed. If they know, like Jan had said, they'll rise to your expectations. So we mm-hmm. thought, let's identify what our expectations are. And I think that's really where play theory came from.
Yeah.
And I remember we were trying to identify these principles. I remember one was have fun. And that one kind of evolved into the let go and play.
Yeah.
And there was one, I think it was something like pay attention, which is what our be present is now, yeah. which is, yeah. you know, pay attention is a little more caustic. It's like, mm-hmm. "Hey, stop what you're doing and do this instead." And
yeah.
be present is just this huge, masterful principle.
Yeah.
I think we had one, we were really worried about people doing anything inappropriate. So we had
did we say keep it clean?
Yeah, keep it clean. And then we went to this improv workshop and we've got the yes and. Mm-hmm. And so that's how it all started. Yeah, it was really clear right away that there was something to this that was, if it served our rehearsals and our improv scenes mm-hmm. or our staged theater so well, it was really valuable in our personal scenes yeah. interaction. I hope you enjoyed learning about the origins of play theory. Life is definitely a journey. I really loved reminiscing about my time on the trail with Jana. There was so much to talk about. We'll hear more from her next week when we learn more about how play theory took its final iteration. Until then, remember, happy isn't something that happens to you, it's something you make happen. And here at the Happiness Playbook, we're all about helping you do just that. Until next week, keep practicing happy. You got this.